This is Business Rockstars. I'm Brittany Lehman, and my guest today is Rena Andrews, CEO of Lolita. Rena, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So for those who aren't familiar with Lolita, give us the quick elevator pitch.
Lolita is a fashion and lifestyle brand dedicated to the empowerment of women. The key to our success is through women tapping into their own self-confidence, beauty, and strength. Our curated accessories are handcrafted using the most luxurious materials that feel incredible against the skin and make you feel as good as you look.
That is so cool. And so what makes Lolita unique?
I founded Lolita, or I consider the official launch a Kickstarter in 2015. And what I realized was even though I was selling accessories, I was getting a lot more women's stories than just their size. They were willing to share with me like their intimate experiences, their insecurities. And I realized that I'd created a brand concept that really made women tap into their own self-confidence and question things and look at themselves. And it was more than just making accessories. Along those same lines, I interviewed about 10 to 12 different women for the Kickstarter campaign, and they all shared with me how the pieces are really tokens for them of their own self-confidence or something to look down with and sort of find presence. Mm-hmm. And I believe when you're present, you are your true self mm-hmm. and who you are. So I really wanted the pieces to be reminders to own your own everything about you.
Right. And
then sort of from an aesthetic perspective, I wasn't traditionally trained in design, so I put together a lot of components that you don't normally see. My theme is a garter clip, so you'll see that on a bracelet or on a choker and
right.
these jump rings and the jewelry. So it really is sort of a different take on fashion.
That's amazing. And you're wearing some of your line right now.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about, we got the bracelet, we got some necklace, we got some, what is this called?
It's a bracelet, I guess, with a hand chain. There's a running corset theme through a lot of it because it does have a seductive twist to the line.
Right.
So I use primarily sterling because I love it. But each of it's handcrafted. This piece is actually adjustable, which is a running theme through a lot of the pieces.
That's really nice.
So, yeah, so you can adjust it to your size like a corset. I use all Italian lambskin leather in the nice. Leather series, so it feels super soft and molds to your skin.
Oh, very cool.
And then a tassel series here.
It's very pretty.
Thank you.
Does your past experience play into you creating this brand?
It's funny because Lolita is pretty much everything I've ever done and nothing I've ever done at the same time.
Okay.
I brought together all my years sort of as either a hobby or as a vocation of being a teacher, of being a dancer, of studying acting, of being an entrepreneur. So I was forced, you know, to learn graphic design and all these things. And
right.
so I pulled all of these experiences together and I juxtaposed it with years of being in dance classes where I watched women and the tremendous power when they're really present and they own their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they get to express it through accessories.
Right.
So I wanted to create pieces for them and for myself as well.
And like you said, you had pretty much no experience in starting a company. So
no.
What were some of the steps you took to get the ball going and to actually say, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to start this.
What was funny, it was actually my mom's birthday. And I was like, I had this burning desire to make a box with a garter clip closure
okay.
that I ended up getting the patent on. And so I was like, do you have any of grandma's garter clips? And she's like, actually, I do. And she pulls out this little baggie with vintage garter clips. So I made this box and then I was like, okay, what am I going to put in the box? And I started making more accessories from that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying all this to say that I didn't necessarily know what it was going to grow into, but I just
right.
continued to follow my heart and where that was taking me. And it was walking into a leather store and seeing all these components and seeing how can these work together and finding someone who could help me with production and the line sort of growing from there. But it wasn't
right.
that I set out and was like, I want to develop this brand concept. And it was really just following my heart and knowing that I wanted to create something bigger and inspire more people than I was doing through my tutoring and teaching company.
That's amazing. And you mentioned you have a lot of your things patented.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, that was something brand new for you also.
Yeah.
Do you have any tips for entrepreneurs who are like, I really want to patent this, but I just don't know how to even start it?
Hire an attorney.
Okay.
I researched stuff online and someone initially went with the box who had worked in packaging was like, you need to get this patented.
Okay.
And I actually had done a patent and a trademark. The trademark ended up getting approved conditionally, but I ended up not going into the same use.
Okay.
So that was a lesson learned and money lost.
Yeah.
And so know what you're doing when you actually do, because some of them are very specific.
Right.
And what I did hear a tip recently was that the founder of Spanx did not have the money to do a patent initially. So what she did was, you know, a lot of time on Google, her own research. And then when she had the entire package together, she called up the attorney and was like, okay, I've done all this work. Can you put all the final touches on it and submit it? Because in the long run, if you submit it incorrectly, it can cost you more money.
Right.
So
that's a really good tip. And you're currently in a round of funding. What kind of tips do you have for entrepreneurs who are looking to raise money?
I would say wait till you're ready.
Okay.
I know it's really tempting in the beginning because you start thinking about, oh my God, if I had money, I could do all of these things. But what I realized was so many gems came out of not having the funding. Okay. And having to be creative and having to sort of figure things out. And I think that if you can't figure that out in the beginning, even when you have money later and sort of larger problems come out, it just sort of helps continue to teach you about problem solving. And the other thing is if your idea might mold and change. So if you hit up an investor too early that you know would be sort of for a larger amount, then you might turn them off down the line because they're still thinking about the first project that you pitched them.
Right.
Even though you're like, no, my business has changed.
Right.
But I think that first impressions are lasting impressions. So
totally.
You're better off waiting till you know what you want.
Did you find it hard or do you find it hard to raise money for your products? Because they are kind of out of the box.
Yeah.
And, you know.
I do.
Yeah.
and being in a round of funding now, I think, you know, people are used to, it's funny, it's like, yeah, we'll put 20, 50 million in this tech thing, but, you know, raising, you know, $100,000 or $200,000 for a brand of luxury items is
right.
somehow seen, well, I guess because it's more of a creative endeavor. And I think it's more, I don't want to say it's a niche market, but people really have to figure out, okay, how are we going to be able to capitalize and make money
right.
in the long run? I mean, and the reality is you obviously can make a lot of money through apparel and fashion.
Right.
But I think it's harder to convince people and needing a bigger proof of concept. So
totally. And how are you convincing people?
I'm still working on it.
Okay. One day at a time.
But I think for me, it's I'm trying to figure out how to work smarter, not harder, and find people who actually do invest in fashion and understand the business right. more as opposed to saying, but you, as opposed to pitching to general investors.
Right.
I think it's finding the right people who understand this kind of project.
Totally. Which, surrounding yourself with the right people to help you kind of make it to that next level.
Exactly.
What's been the most challenging part about starting a business? Or the two or three.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a lot of challenges that you've come into contact with.
Yeah. I think the hardest part a lot of is it can be very lonely and isolating and you're always on.
Right.
And I find it very hard to just not think about work.
Mm-hmm.
Naturally, even when I'm going to bed or when I'm meditating, it's like, okay, what can I do to,
right.
to you know, improve the company? And I think that, I think it's hard, especially if you're, you know, a solopreneur starting out, like how do you find that network of
right.
people so that you're and not by yourself in it.
Do you find work-life balance achievable or is it just at the point?
For me or in general?
For you.
I'm working on it. I have a couple non-negotiables. For me, it's I have to get 8 hours of sleep.
Right.
Of course, there are exceptions. You have to get up sometimes.
Right.
But as a rule, I'm not going to sacrifice my sleep, mm-hmm. especially because I pretty much do work 7 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, it has to, you know, there has to be some balance before I lose my mind.
Right.
And I do a lot of meditation and go
that's
to classes
good.
And that's my, you know, release of it. I'm trying
right.
to get back into dance classes, but I think it's important to do what you love in the meantime, because in the end, like why am I building a business? It's to enjoy life and to have these experiences.
So exactly.
It's easy to forget if it's just work all the time.
Totally. Well, we will be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is Business Rockstars. More with Rena Andrews, CEO of Lalita, in a minute.
Three simple rules and advice every entrepreneur should follow. I'm Alex Worley with the Business Rockstars Minute. Often in life, we make things overcomplicated. The following are three pieces of advice that bring us back to basics and show you anything is possible. One, if you don't go after what you want, you'll never get it. Sounds simple enough, but step back for a moment and realize what you have missed out on by just not trying. Two, if you don't ask, the answer will always be no. No is a polarizing word, so you have to be able to dish and take it. Three, simple habits. Go, ask, do, give it a shot. Even if you're sitting on the right track, if you don't do anything, you'll still get hit. I'm Alex Worley, and this has been a Business Rockstars Minute.
Hey guys, good news. The outrageously expensive little blue pill is now generic, which means you can get the prescription medication to treat ED at affordable prices. And Hims makes it extra affordable. Right now, get your first month's supply for free. All you pay is just $5 for your medical consultation when you go to forhims.com/doctor. After that, it's just $30 for a month's supply. Sure beats paying big bucks for just one blue pill, doesn't it? Plus, you won't need an awkward in-person doctor's appointment to get the prescription. Hims has doctors online who can prescribe the medication, and a pharmacy sends it right to your door. It's affordable, private, and incredibly easy. Nobody likes dealing with ED. Now, thanks to Hims, nobody has to. And that's really good news. To get your first order for just $5, you need to go to this exclusive address, forhims.com/doctor. That's forhims.com/doctor for your first month for just $5. forhims.com/doctor.
Prescription products require an online physician consultation and are only available if the physician determines a prescription is appropriate. See website for full details.
This is Business Rockstars. I am back with my guest, Rina Andrews, CEO of Lalita. Rina, thanks so much for joining us today.
It's a pleasure.
So we have the tank that Janet Jackson wore. Maybe not the tank, but close enough.
Yes.
So tell me about this, because it looks really, really cool.
So all of our sort of ready-to-wear line is made from bamboo. So that's an example of a heavyweight bamboo fabric.
Okay.
It feels really amazing when you wear it.
It's really soft.
Exactly, and heavyweight, so it's not your average tank.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite features with the tanks is the straps are actually interchangeable.
Very cool.
So you can have different looks. My favorite are the crisscross, but I love straps. So
yeah.
But yeah, it's made to have different looks. Like a lot of our pieces are really versatile and change from
That's
day
very
to night.
Cool. And that was probably a great moment for you seeing Janet Jackson wearing it. What did you feel like? And did you get a ton of press from that, I'm sure?
Yeah, it was literally like I see like a tag on Instagram and I open it and I see the cover of Billboard and Janet's in my tank. And then I'm like, oh my God, and she's wearing it inside.
Yeah.
And I had no idea that this was
happening.
So it was, it's been, I'm still kind of in shock from it. But
sure.
I was hugely flattered because she's been such an icon of mine since childhood. So
that's amazing.
And
your brand aims to empower and inspire women. Was it hard to build an authentic brand? And do you have any advice for entrepreneurs who are looking to build an authentic brand?
I feel that the hardest thing about building an authentic brand is finding your own authenticity. So if you can do the work to find that in yourself, whether that means meditation or sports or therapy or whatever that is, so that you are fully in touch with who you are and comfortable with it. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean that you're like this completely evolved person,
right.
But I just mean that you can be truthful in who you are, what you want, and all of those things. And I think that when you operate from that space and that center, and then you're able to sort of creatively design a brand around it and the two are aligned, I think that naturally people can relate to the truth in others and they can feel when it's not real.
Yeah. What do you think the most shocking thing about starting a business has been for you? Something that you were just like, wow, I did not see that coming.
How long it takes.
Oh.
Because in the beginning, you have this idea of like, oh my God, I have this product and it's going to, fly off the shelves and everyone's going to love it. And then you're like, oh wait, how are you going to get it to the stores and then the distribution? And I don't mean to say that I was that naive, but really understanding it's like, how much time it takes to build press, to build trust with consumers and to get into stores and then see, you know, you have your test order and then when are they going to make the real order? So everything takes a lot longer than you expect it to.
Yeah. And you're kind of a serial entrepreneur. What are the pros and cons of being your own boss?
You know, a pro to be able to wake up when I want, in theory.
Yeah. But
then, you know, the flip side of that is I think it's hard not to have, you know, never had a paid vacation that's not
right.
on my dime.
Yeah.
And definitely self-discipline. I went to Brown and, you know, it's known as being super liberal and you can create your own curriculum, but that sort of way of living is not for everyone.
Right.
And it's not, again, to say it's better. It's just some people like more structure. So you have to be able to be comfortable to sort of operate outside the box. And every day I have to figure out, okay, what do I need to do and make a list? And I have no one saying you need to get this done and that done. And so really being able to be self-motivating can be a challenge. And then also when you're not feeling like doing work, giving yourself a break.
Right.
Because there's always the like, oh, but I'm not here yet. I'm not here yet. So if I work harder, I'm going to get there. And I think sometimes being able to just step back and say, no, if you pause and rest, you know what, tomorrow it might actually just flow out of you, all of the work.
Right.
As opposed to trying to bulldoze through it when what you really need is a break.
Right. Were you afraid to fail when you started this business?
You know, I feel like success and failure are such sort of personal concepts. And
right.
it's like we all define our version of success differently. So for some people to say the fact that I've gotten this far or had celebrities wearing my stuff or in the store even taking these risks would
right.
say that I've been successful.
Right.
Whereas for me, I might be saying, well, I'm not really successful until I have a million or 10 million and, you know, 100 million in sales. So does that mean that tomorrow I should say that I've been a failure? So I feel like I am afraid that, like, what if I suddenly had to stop this?
Right.
But I also know it's, like, that it's going to be relative and anything that could be perceived as a failure are always such great learning experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of seeing it as a failure, more as just changing perspective
right.
on it and recognizing the good things you've done along the way so that you can keep going forward instead of continuously moving the carrot.
And how do you stay ahead of the competition? Because I feel like this is kind of a competitive space.
Mm-hmm.
How do you differentiate your brand?
I definitely feel like as a brand concept, there is a unicorn factor to Lalita in that there aren't a lot of brands that are going across different product categories. And even this year, it's like I've had press for tank tops, a belt, a bra, and cuffs and different
right.
jewelry. So in that regard, I don't feel like there's a brand concept also where the focus is seduction or that sort of can walk the line the way that Lalita does.
Mm-hmm.
But I do acknowledge that within each product category that there is competition. I do know that the designs are unique and using the garter clip theme. And I was really thankful when that Sharon Stone came out in the New York Times. And I actually had people saying, I saw your bra and
right.
contacting and knowing right away that it was Lalita. So I was thankful for that type of brand recognition for it.
Right. And how did you get your audience and your fans? Was it kind of organic? Did it just kind of happen naturally or?
It did. I had a large group of women around me from years of dance classes.
Okay.
So that was my initial network sort of when I was ready to say, okay, I've been working on this. What do you guys think of it?
Yeah.
And they were so incredibly supportive. And when I did Kickstarter, I made sure that I engaged all of them. And from there, it was a word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And then last year I mailed, celebrity stylist Bea Åkerlund. I mailed her a box of my stuff and she first fell in love with the packaging and was like, I think your stuff would do really well in our showroom. So through that, I've been able to get a lot of traction and exposure to stylists and things that I wouldn't necessarily have the ability to do if it was just me pitching these
right.
people. So to speak.
That's great. What are the three top pieces of advice that you have for aspiring entrepreneurs or business owners?
Okay, I'm going to use a few quotes here.
Okay, perfect.
But, on my coffee mug is proceed as if success is inevitable.
Okay.
And it's definitely how I live my life. I just keep going. I don't know how it's going to happen. I don't necessarily always know, okay, where are the funds going to come from? Where is this going to happen? But I just keep going knowing that something will. And with that, my other piece of advice is don't ask the how. The how is not really for you to figure out, that those means will come along. And sometimes it's a matter of just making a decision from go to A to B and trusting that the rest of it, whatever information, is going to figure itself out. And lastly, do not let what you cannot do interfere with what you can. And there's always something you can do. There's always a step you can take to move to the next level. And I just feel like even if you, just by putting the energy forward to go in that direction, good things will happen. And maybe you'll need to make a course adjustment. But the most important thing is realize that there is always something in your power that you are in control of doing.
That was my guest, Rina Andrews, CEO of Lalita. This is Business Rockstars.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter 0707 at checkout. That's Harry.
I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Jo Angelo is joining us right now. She's the CEO of Genev. Recap for us what your company does.
Genev is a women's healthcare company focused on women's hormonal health. And we provide healthy products and content to help women live the best versions of themselves.
So you said you guys are providing products on the back. Because I was going to ask, how are you guys able to monetize what you guys are doing? So how do you go and get these products? Are you the ones making them? Are you finding, you know, products that you end up white labeling? Are you doing joint ventures and affiliates and host beneficiaries? How are you guys doing it?
It's a combination. So our healthy products, they're consumer products. We sell them on Amazon.com, Walgreens.com, and we sell them via direct via Genev.com. Okay. And they are products that we both manufacture. We've also private labeled some. We develop our products focused on the symptoms women experience with hormonal change in their body. And so a couple of the products, one in particular, we have developed ourselves and manufacturer. It's got FDA clearance. A couple of the others we've private labeled with the Genev brand, just to give a family of products for women.
Nice. And so when it comes to selling those products, is it specifically inbound marketing, people reading your content, or do you guys actually have different strategies and tactics to go out, put advertisements and marketing campaigns out that yield sales?
Mm-hmm.
Is it just content marketing?
Yes.
Is it both?
It's a combination of both. So content marketing is huge, obviously, because we're building a consumer brand that's based on trust in a relationship with women around their health. So that's one facet. The other, we do some paid advertising, obviously search and SEO work just to start to build our brand. We've done some press as well. And then we obviously market through the Amazon and Walgreens engines that we're part of from a distribution perspective.
Nice. What have you found being some of the best platforms to distribute your content? And what have you found being some of the best platforms to sell on? Because a lot of people are doing Facebook ads, LinkedIn, you said Google, SEO, different things like that. What's working best for you?
So on the content side, we're obviously publishing ourselves direct and then pushing that out through channels. We're really building the backlinks with different influencers in the women's health space, whether it's mommy bloggers or, you know, bloggers focused on nutrition and exercise and so forth. But we also publish a lot to Medium. It's a long form space that a lot of people appreciate content, and that's the kind of original content that we're creating with medical experts and with women telling their stories. On the marketing side, or the digital marketing, Facebook ads, huge. Our space, because women's health sometimes includes some terminology that is a little bit more sensitive in nature, we really have to work with Facebook to find the right language so that it is publishable. Same with YouTube and Google.
Awesome. And I know that it is difficult to deal with Facebook sometimes with the wording and everything like that. A lot of people don't understand. And I think that if you dominate Google search engine optimization, people are probably, I know you and I talked, we said we can't say some of the things, but people are probably all typing that in on Google.
Yeah.
And if you guys can make sure that you're, you know, paying for those $12 keyword searches, then you guys are going to dominate. But then you got to have a good lead capture and funnel and conversion process at the back end. What has it been like for you? Because I know this is new for you. Getting into this space, dealing with generating, qualifying, nurturing, converting leads. How has that experience been for you?
You know, first of all, when you come from a big corporate space, I was an executive in the corporate space, so I had a team that did a lot of this work. So I've learned to do it myself. That's number one. And you've got to understand it and dig in. I think more than anything, especially as well as a startup, you have small budgets. And so I can't go out and put the $12 on a term that a big competitor, a big brand that's already in the space is buying on. And so I've got to find the long tail terms, own those, and start to build gradually. Especially on the content side, that's where I'm going to build loyalty and trust with consumers. And so that's my angle to trying to find a unique and different way into this business. A third mechanism is really focusing on the medical referral channels. I'm talking to doctors, physical therapists, women's wellness spas and centers, oncology departments to get our products into their space so it develops that word of mouth.
How has it been received from influencers, from partners, from doctors, from different things like that? Has it just been kind of like, we get it, let's do something, let's figure out how to make it work? Or has there been like, well, I don't know?
It's, we get it, you know, for a long time.
Because sometimes first-year businesses have trouble conveying the message, the value proposition, and setting something up in their first year.
Yeah. You know, I'd say with our audience, with women and with medical professionals, they're like, oh, we get it. In fact, when we started this, we surveyed 1,500 women to understand the kind of products they used and where they bought them. And we came back, they gave us feedback we didn't think we'd get. And they said, would someone start the dialogue already around this topic? So well received there. From investors, that's where a topic like this is kind of like, you're not in my
space.
Are you
trying to get
investors right now? I don't quite get it. Yes.
Okay, cool. I'm curious to find out how you are looking to raise money and then allocate it. CEO of Genev, Jill Angelo, is joining us. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Mark Lack. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. We're talking about investors right now. Why do you think you need investors? What are you going to do with the money?
I need investors simply to get the business going. In my space, I'm in the manufacturing space, so I need cash outlay for products up front, as well as to build a consumer brand. It requires digital marketing. And so that's where investors are coming in to fund the business.
Okay. And you're going to use the money for products. You're going to use it for marketing to grow the team and everything like that.
Yes.
How has that process been? Is this your first time trying to raise money?
It is. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, it's been probably one of the harder parts of the job.
I was going to say.
I had original angel funding up front, and that was a great kickoff and support system to get the business going. And I think maintaining that, especially in the manufacturing space, I've got to find an interesting combination of debt-driven funding for production and then save the equity for team and consumer brand building. That's kind of my strategy. And finding that right mix is a challenge just to get it right, especially at such an early stage.
What has been one of your best lessons so far when selling? I remember when I was going out raising millions, and it's just a crazy experience to sit down with high-level people that can write a check for seven figures and getting the feedback from them and being nervous. And what has been one of the best lessons for you that you could share? Because a lot of people out there are probably like, I'm trying to raise money too. I'm struggling, or I'm trying to figure out if it's right to raise money. What's been the best lesson for you on that?
Well, first of all, really understand the investor and their motivations. Mm-hmm. If you go talk to them and they're not interested in your space or in your kind of business, you're just wasting their time and you're wasting yours. And I've learned that. I've been told that as advice, but I think once you really feel it, when you find that connection with someone who's really interested in your space, that's great. I think as well, know your numbers. Understand the economics of your business and how one thing builds and leads to another. And then have that dialogue with the person. And it's okay if you don't know every answer, as long as they really understand how you think. That's probably the greatest bit of advice I'd give to somebody, because that's when you get into the dialogue and the intimidation factor goes away.
Awesome. I love that advice. Now I want advice on the person who has a 9-to-5 job. There's a lot of them out there. Yep. You made the jump. But I think there's so many people that are crippled in fear, crippled in uncertainty about, is it the right time? How am I going to pay my bills? We get all different types of answers. That's why I'm excited to get yours. Somebody has a 9-to-5 job. They want to, desperately want to cut the cord and go after their passions and their business. But for fear, uncertainty, and other variables, they're not going yet. What's your advice?
I think it's really hard to dip your toe and try and do it after hours. I know that seems like the logical way to do it, but you're never going to put yourself out there and truly be successful in a way that it requires. Like this is a put your whole self into it kind of
you're mode. All in or you're not.
You're all in. Mm. And honestly, you could always go back. You can always go back to the 9 to 5.
But most people are terrified of going back because if their friends and their family are like, well, you quit your job, which we already said not to do. You went out and your business failed. We were rooting for you, but we kind of knew it was going to fail, which is like, great. What a great friend or family member. And now you got to go back to the 9 to 5 job. That's like the nightmare. I think most people, employees are terrified of losing their job. Entrepreneurs are terrified of having a job. So to quit your job, go get be an entrepreneur and then have it fail and come back. It's like the nightmare of nightmares.
Yeah, it's not fun, you know, but you're going to have to make tougher decisions in the business than deciding to quit and go back. And hey, you know what? You maybe don't need to go back. You could do other freelance or whatever to sustain some income until you figure out the next step. But I think it's harder being an entrepreneur and the decisions you have to make versus going back.
I 100% agree. But again, to the point, a lot of people are going through that struggle in their mind, right? Oh no, what am I going to do?
Yeah, and I don't want to. I have the same struggle. You know. I'm not.
I remember thinking that before my business took off. I remember my first year, and even at some points in my second year, being like, "Oh my goodness, it'd be so much easier to just shut everything down. Mm-hmm. I'm only paying other people first. Like I'm working to make money to pay other people first." And pay myself last. And if there's not enough to go around, I don't get anything or I get very little. But I'm the one doing most of the work that ends up paying all these people. And it's just like, it'd be so much easier to go get a job and keep all my own money. And being in that place is such a terrible feeling. But I think having gone through that, pushing through it and getting to a place where you're like, now I'm at a place in my life where I don't ever have to worry about money. It's just like to look back and be like, you got through it. That's the goal, I think, of an entrepreneur is to get to that place. But you got to get through the hustle and you got to get through the adversity. Take me back to a season in your life where you had adversity. Could be maybe in this first year of your business.
It's right now. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm 1 year into this business, so I'm in that place right now where you're worrying about money and you're paying everybody else before you're paying yourself and you're working like you've never worked.
Yeah.
You know, I've had 20 years in tech and I'm working harder than I've ever worked. There are super low days, but the highs are really great. And you just have to kind of say, okay, I have another woman that works with me and we're always like, okay, what are we celebrating today? And I know it sounds kind of hokey, but we're like, hey, let's celebrate the person who commented on that blog post because it was one person that we reached. And so we make it a point to have a little bit of quirky humor to keep our spirits up, to keep us going. But it's not, I'm in it right now. And every day is a self-talk to myself around staying positive and just fighting through it.
And that's huge. It's the self-talk going on in your head that's either going to crush you and make you quit or it's going to get you back up and keep going. I love that you just said, you know, you celebrate the small wins. Reminds me of a quote from my friend, John Assaroff. He says, celebrate the small wins as if they're big and the big wins as if they're normal. Mm. Jill, it was a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you
so much. I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. You can join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
And now, a Business Rockstars Minute. What do the best bosses do every day? I'm Pat O'Brien with the Business Rockstars Minute. Your company is only as good as the culture, and that starts with the boss. Here are some things the best bosses do every day to provide a happy workplace and make them wildly successful. One, they don't micromanage. Be an amazing boss by taking comfort in the fact you hired the right employees with the right talents and qualifications. Two, they reinforce good work. It's a simple concept. If you boost morale, you boost productivity right there in the workplace. Three, they listen. Here's a trick. Say, tell me more to show you're actually listening or when giving feedback. Cultivating respect in the workplace doesn't happen all at once. It's about a series of daily habits that mesh creativity and leadership. It also instills trust in them as well. I'm Pat O'Brien, and this has been a Business Rockstars Minute.
Question, do you have a health insurance plan you are not happy with? Well, Bethany and Jason thought they were stuck. Their plan just kept getting more expensive, and Bethany's favorite doctor didn't even take that plan anymore. And then some friends at church told them about MediShare.
With our previous insurance, we were paying $1,200 a month. With MediShare, we now pay around $600 a month.
Yes, they're paying $600 less per month, and that's a pretty typical savings with MediShare. And they actually like MediShare more.
I was able to go back to my original doctor that I absolutely loved, and it's just been an absolutely beautiful thing being a part of MediShare.
Yeah, so they pay a lot less, and they like it more. No wonder MediShare is growing so fast. Find out more. They're super easy to talk to. All you have to do is call 844-91-BIBLE. That's 844-91-BIBLE, 844-91-BIBLE.
We're here early before they wake up. We stay late, we stay informed, we invest in the latest technology.
We take the time to train the next generation of doctors and nurses. We work together to make sure we heal their bodies and their minds.
We do this not because it's our job, but because this is about our veterans' lives. This is our mission. More than 300,000 of us working as one, together with families and loved ones. No matter where they live in this country, we'll be there.
We all come together and stand together to serve our veterans. We stand strong, united.
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. This is our CEO roundtable segment. And as always, two rockstar CEOs are joining us right now. Who are you and what do you do?
I'm Kara Santana, CEO and founder of the Glam App.
And what is the Glam App? Do you might as well give us a little bit of background?
Right. The Glam App is Uber for beauty. It's hair, right, makeup, and nails on demand.
All right. Well, let's see if he is the Uber of something, too. What do you do?
My name is Taylor Walker. I'm the CEO and founder of Earth Encounters. It's a gaming company. We create board games, educational board games that are also fun, but teach people about societal issues in a competitive way.
Very cool. Give me a contextual example. Tell us about one of those games. I think that's awesome.
Okay. So, like, for instance, answer me this. What changed the world more, Google or Facebook, and why?
Google or Facebook? That's a tough one. I would say Google, okay, just because it's an educational tool. It's a learning tool. Mm-hmm. For Facebook can be as well, mm-hmm, but I feel like Facebook's more of a news feed, mm-hmm, where if you're following the wrong people, you're going to be conditioned with the wrong information.
Right.
All of my friends on Facebook and followers and stuff like that, it's peer motivation. You scroll down my news feed, you're going to walk away like you're on fire. You're going to be
exactly
motivated.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a typical average person, you probably have, you know, friends that are conditioning the wrong things on your newsfeed, mm-hmm, whereas Google is going to be based on the individual user. If you're typing, mm-hmm, in good things, number one search thing on Google is how-tos, mm-hmm, and that means people are looking to learn when they go on Google, mm-hmm, whereas Facebook, you're looking to be conditioned with social media. That's my input.
I'm going
to
say Facebook because it's like connective.
I feel like it's a trick question, obviously.
It's a connective tissue that creates communication anywhere in the world, and you can have a conversation with
through friends and family,
yes,
right? See, there's no right or wrong answer.
Yeah.
But see, the fact is we're creating that dialogue. And so, yeah, what we've done is we've created a whole myriad of issues and we put it into a platform where people can talk about and discuss these dialogues. Mm. And so that's
great
what
idea.
We do.
Very cool. What was the hardest part about getting your company started? And then we'll talk about Kara's.
I would say the hardest part about getting started was the funding part. So we went through Kickstarter, a crowdfunding campaign, and I've never done anything like it of the sort.
Yeah.
And so originally it was just a learning curve for us and putting together the Kickstarter campaign, putting together our team to help promote what we were doing and getting our news coverage and stuff like that. I think that was the hardest part for us.
I can totally identify because I just feel like I got very lucky in our first seed round of funding or with, mm-hmm, our angel investment. But now that we're gearing up for the second round, there's so many things that I don't necessarily know because my background is not in business,
exactly,
and it's not in finance. Mm-hmm. And there's just so much to navigate. So, mm-hmm, and money makes or breaks a business.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
It's super important.
And information.
Yes.
Sorry.
Information for sure. What do you think is something that you would go back and share with yourself when you were getting started? I think maybe it could have been to avoid Kickstarter or how to do Kickstarter better.
I would just say prepare more. So what I just kind of took 6 months in order to put together our campaign. But when I, after the fact that I did my research, it turns out that companies were actually taking a year, at least a year in advance to market their, to basically build their community, market their product, and then come out with the Kickstarter campaign. So I think preparation was a little, I would have went back and did a little bit more of that, but okay. It turned out okay.
It's a good one. Kara?
Oh, gosh. I mean, there's
just... The Glam app's been around for 17 months, so what's something that you wish you knew when you got started?
You know, I think for me, being a woman and being a young woman and being a young woman who doesn't have a business background, there were so many things to navigate. And I think I oftentimes didn't choose my battles because I felt such a sense of need to sort of change people's perspectives. And I would, going back and looking in retrospect, I would say, you know what, just focus on what it is you're trying to accomplish and don't be so bogged down with the criticism and negativity.
I would have to agree with that. I mean, us being entrepreneurs, you have to just, you know, be very strong in your resolve with whatever you're doing, with whatever company you have. So there's going to be a lot of doubters out there, and you want to just push through that and just see your vision through to the end. And I think that's really important.
Yeah. I love what you just said, which was doubters. We can call them haters, doubters, whatever. People don't support us.
They come in many different shapes and sizes, but I mean, you just got to stay strong, and being an entrepreneur is a bumpy road, and you have to have that type of resolve in order to be successful.
You come from an acting background, so at some point you've learned how to overcome fear of rejection, what other people think about you, being nervous on stage or on camera.
Yeah.
Those are all things that I feel like a lot of people struggle with, which is why they stay in a safe, secure, certain, comfortable environment, job, life, relationship. Mm-hmm. So I think at the end of the day, every entrepreneur starts to condition themselves with a new way of looking at failure, a new way of looking at rejection, a new way of not so much caring about what other people think. Mm-hmm. When do you feel like you had developed that mindset, and what do you think are some keys to developing that mindset for people that maybe don't have it yet?
Oh, for me, I was an athlete, and so I played college sports. And so, I mean, my coach would yell at me all the time. So that's like one form of rejection. So just, you know, being able to, I've also been able to, like, you know, have interviews and stuff like that and press conferences and stuff like that. So I've kind of been able to, it's kind of molded me, or I've kind of taken some of the skills I've learned from that experience in order to, like, help me in the entrepreneurial space. But I mean, I'm sure you'd go through the same thing in acting.
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, I said it earlier, is rejection is just one more attempt at success. So it's like, it's another opportunity. And I think if you look at the glass half full, as opposed to half empty, you're probably more inclined to continue to push through, as you said, and have that resilience. And and so I just try and, you know, learn from everything that happens, good or bad.
Yeah, one of my mentors always used to tell me, like, he wants to fail because the more he fails, the more he gets to learn stuff.
Exactly.
And so all your failures as a whole make up your whole being, and that contributes to your success.
And that's a shift that a lot of people have to learn how to develop, is at the end of the day, what separates successful entrepreneurs and people in general is the mindset. We're here at the CEO Roundtable. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. Joining us is two rockstar CEOs. Give us a quick recap. Who are you and what do you do?
Kara Santana, CEO and founder of the Glam App, an on-demand beauty platform bringing consumers and providers of beauty together.
Thanks for being here.
Taylor Walker, co-founder of Earth Encounters, a gaming company that creates socially conscious board games, and I actually sell board games.
Did you guys always think that you were going to be entrepreneurs? Like, she stumbled into it, I know.
Yeah, I just fell
into it. She stumbled into it, but what about you?
I kind of did. I mean, growing up, I saw my father both do the entrepreneurial thing. He used to do licensed beach towels for both the Lakers, Michael Jackson. And then I also saw him do the corporate side of things. And I just saw the kind of toll, the emotional and stress that it put on his body. And so I kind of didn't want that for myself. And so I always knew that when I was going back and getting my MBA, I wanted to put all these skills I'm learning towards creating my own.
Guys, I wish we had more time. It's been a pleasure having you with us. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.